It's WHFR Dearborn. It's time now for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. We are here in the studio live at Henry Ford Community College. It is October the 29th, the last Friday, the last journal show before the election. We've done a lot of interviews with a lot of people, and we have a couple more politicians, political candidates scheduled for the last half hour today. And we hope to have Amy Smith calling in about 1:30. She is... You may not have heard her name before, but she's a candidate for the same seat that John Dingell and Rob Steele are running for, and she's with the Green Party. You know, alternative views around here at WHFR give you some ideas to think about. And Secretary of State's candidate. We had a previous Secretary of State candidate on about a month or so ago from the Libertarian Party, but hey, what about that candidate from the Democratic Party? Jocelyn Benson is scheduled to be calling in about 1:45. But in the studio right now, hey, we don't live on politics alone around here, but also culture and art and entertainment and fun. And with me in the studio is Jerry Jablinski, who is the artistic director for Henry Ford Community College's Theater for Young Audiences. And welcome to the Journal today, Jerry.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jay.
Tell us about the play coming up. This is, of course, it's called The Secret Garden, and it's supposedly a classic from Frances Hodgson Burnett. And I'm sorry to say, I think I've heard the title, but I'm not familiar with the play. So tell us a little bit about the plot, the themes.
Certainly. Well, Frances herself had... a death in her family. She experienced the death of her adolescent son, and it was one of the motivating factors to writing this novel. It's about a young girl, Mary, who loses both of her parents and becomes an orphan and is sent to live with her uncle at Misselthwaite Manor in Yorkshire, England. And so she's living in this big house, but her uncle is a recluse. He's been a recluse for 10 years, ever since his wife passed away. She fell off of a swing in the garden while she was 9 months pregnant with their son. And a few days later passed away. The son was born, and the son lives in the manor. But never sees his father.
Hmm.
The son's presence is a painful reminder to Dad about his wife's death.
Mm.
And so Dad spends a lot of time traveling, and when he's in the manor, he doesn't really see his son or even his niece, who's just come to live there. But Mary and Colin become friends, and they discover the garden in which Mrs. Lennox died, and they open it back up. It was sealed by Lord Craven, and they make it bloom again.
Mm. Spoiler alert here, folks. I don't want to go too far, okay? It's a secret garden, so we don't want to give away the secret, Jerry. I don't know how far you have to go for that. There's more secret to come, though, beyond that.
Oh,
right?
Certainly.
So
certainly.
It sounds a little bit heavy or depressing here. I mean, serious, certainly, but it's more, I would guess, more an adventure story, a fantasy story.
Mm-hmm. Yes, actually, there was a film version.
Oh, that's probably where I heard of it. Yeah.
Ford Coppola was the executive producer
of
the film version, and Maggie Smith played one of the key roles, that is the head of the household who's in charge of Colin and Mary. So it's a very exciting and dynamic story, very fanciful, as you say.
So that means that there's quite a visual spectacle for the people in the audience that come to this. I mean, the usual young person's productions are have great costumes and great set decoration, and there's usually action, sometimes dancing and music. Dancing and music this time or not?
No dancing, but there is music. There's a score, a complete score rented that goes along with the show. So it's very exciting.
Wow. Okay. And the director of this is Judy Fletcher. And she's done many other productions for us, too. For those people that aren't don't know about the Henry Ford Community College theater program, specifically this Theater for Young Audiences program, although it's been around for years, and folks, if you're listening and you've never heard about this program for theater programs for young audiences here, I don't know where you've been, okay, but I'm glad you're here today. This is not a play in which there's all children, nor, and correct me here, Jerry, if I'm wrong, and it's also, these plays are not exclusively with children in them, of course. I mean, casting is, there's some younger persons and some older persons.
Yes, the majority of the cast comes from our student body, theater majors, theater minors, and students who are interested in doing a show. And there are a few young people in the cast who are under college age as well. But we target our matinee performances to Wayne County Elementary Schools and our weekend performances for families.
Right, and those will be starting soon. The ones for families are Friday through Sunday starting November 12th. So that's just one weekend away, two weekends away. Yeah, it's not that far away. It's going to be on Fridays. Just looking at my notes here. Fridays and Saturdays at 7 p.m., but Saturday also has a 2 p.m. matinee. And, of course, Sundays, typically when we do plays here, there is the 2 p.m. only. And so there's going to be 2 p.m. performances for the whole family, for anyone, in fact, but bring the kids, too. I guess I don't see any notes here on my flyer. There's not any problems with language for young people.
Oh, no, not at all. The novel was written for young people, and the adaptation is done for young people. It's a wonderful show for elementary-aged children.
Mm-hmm. Great. How many people are in this cast? Sometimes you're dealing with unbelievably large numbers, but that's not necessary to make a play a great experience.
There's about 15 in this company.
Okay. That's great. Costume changes? Do you have people doing different parts, several parts, sometimes?
No, not several parts, but some actors are playing different roles on different days.
Mm-hmm.
So we have some double casting in that regard.
And I'm always interested to find out if Jerry Jablinski himself has been called into play here. Sometimes you have to slide in there to back up somebody that may be sick and they don't have a second to go in for them. But other times it seems like you begin getting into this Alfred Hitchcock thing about trying to just make an appearance, a ghost in the back or standing in the corner, and somebody yells out from the audience, "I see him! I see him! There he is!" You know, it probably hasn't become that yet, but I almost think it could. But do you have a part in this?
Yes,
up front?
As a matter of fact.
Oh, you do? Okay,
I
good
do
for
have
you.
A small role, yes.
Okay. He's very humble, folks, but he has done a wide range of acting and is also probably, extremely highly skilled, more than the usual actor in mime. And I don't know if you've been doing any of that recently.
Yes, I still do some mime performance work, both improvisation and stage show. I recently performed at the Henry Ford Museum.
Oh, great. Your skills, I'm very aware of all your skills, but our audiences may not know the wide range of talent that we actually have as in all of the theater program, the wide variety of classes we offer, too. Now, people who have already tried out for these plays and are cast in this, they do have to be currently enrolled in a theater class of some sort. Is that correct?
Yes, they earn college credit for this.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes towards their major if they're a theater major, or it's a liberal arts elective if you're just interested in learning a little bit and being involved in a show.
Well, I think it's going to be an exciting thing. The tickets are typical for a display like this, folks. Adults are $12. Students with ID are $10. Children 12 and under are $6. And they can also, if they want to get groups together for these weekend shows of 10 or more, it's $5 a seat. I should mention, again, we're talking to Jerry Jablinski. And that's a lot of letters in your name to mention over the air. But phone number for reservations, if they're considering that, or group information, 313-845-9817, right?
That's correct. And okay. I just want to mention, too, that for the school matinees, which are the weeks of Mondays through Fridays, November 15th through the 19th, mm-hmm. as well as the 29th of November through December 3rd, we still have seats available for the school matinees. A teacher or an administrator can call that same number and make a reservation for a small school group or a large school group, and we are also open to homeschool groups as well.
Right, that's been part of these offerings each year, is to bring in students from the school. Sometimes the first time they might have seen a professional level production, theatrical production, and I see that teachers even receive a study guide with their reservation to help prepare students for the trip. That's cool. And the student seats are $3. However, the money can be raised by the school or the teachers or the parents or something like that, right?
Yes, and teachers and chaperones are free. So mm-hmm. all the adults that come along to those school matinees, since they're doing part of their job in terms of exposing the students to cultural experiences, we offer them a free seat.
Right, and that begins, it says Monday through Fridays, November 15th through 19th is the first group, and then again, November 29th through December 3rd. Those are the school performances, folks, at 10 a.m. Teachers can call 313-845-9817, get them a little field trip. It's an 80-minute play, so if it starts around 10, they'll be out of there by 11:30, 11:45 at the latest, and very conveniently located right here in the Fine Arts Center at Henry Ford Community College main campus. So again, that phone number, 313-845-9817. A great thing for the families to do for the holidays, too. When we mentioned the Friday through Sunday offerings, it's not the Thanksgiving weekend. Everybody gets to celebrate Thanksgiving. But then you're back at it again in December 3rd mm-hmm. through 5th for the weekend. So November 12th through 14th, that's 2 weeks from today, Friday, November 12th through the 14th, and then the 19th through the 21st, the next weekend, and then the last weekend, December 3rd through 5th. Friday and Saturday, 7 p.m., Saturday also at 2 p.m. in the afternoon, and Sunday at 2 p.m. So that's the Secret Garden right here at Henry Ford Community College Theater for Young Persons. Thank you, Jerry, for being with us today in the Journal.
My pleasure, as always, Jay.
Happy Halloween.
Thank you so much.
You know, if you call in this Sunday or send us email, you too can get a Halloween grab bag from WHFR for free.
Excellent.
Everybody calls in. So tell your theater people if they want a spooky package sent to them. Yeah. Never get enough perks for the theater program around here. Okay. Thank you, Jerry, for being with us.
Thank you.
Going to have this public service announcement. Be right back with more information on the new WHFR Journal.
Are you looking for a real degree that's going to prepare you for the future? Then listen up. The Alternative Energy Technology degree is great for students looking to prepare themselves for a career in a new generation of green jobs. Students will learn about renewable energy and promoting and practicing of energy efficiency. If you're interested in more information about this degree or any of the other degrees here at HFCC, please call 1-800-585-HFCC or visit them online at www.hfcc.edu.
And we're back with more of the new WHFR Journal for Friday, October the 29th. Local news and alternative views, our election special. We're now about 13 minutes away from our expected first phone call from one of the political candidates we're going to be talking to today. Amy Smith of the Green Party should be calling about 1:30. And Jocelyn Benson, Democratic candidate for Secretary of State. You probably thought that was just some sort of dull administrative paper-pushing position, right? It's bigger than you think. And we're going to be talking to Jocelyn Benson about the job and about her background and experience for that position, which I guess is kind of balanced to the fact we did talk to a Libertarian candidate, Scotty Bowman, who's running for the same job. And it's kind of fascinating. Before we got into doing some research on Secretary of State, I didn't realize how much they do and how significant a position it really is. So Jocelyn Benson around 1:45 today. Okay, we're looking at stories here from the Dearborn Papers. Dearborn Heights City Council candidates. Well, there's only two out there. And so if you're out there in Dearborn Heights, you got to pick one or the other. Kathy Abdel-Hak and Ned Apigian are competing for it. Good story in last Sunday's Press and Guide or pressandguide.com. Extensive job by Ben Baird of the Press and Guide talking about those two candidates. He's interviewed both of them and gives a great background on both of them, and we'll leave that to you to look into that, primarily because one of those two candidates is on the staff here at WHFR, so I don't want to give anyone the idea that we're doing unfair plugs. And see, I'm not even going to tell you which one of the two. You may already know. Anyway, also Dearborn Heights voters have to decide on millage renewal for garbage and recycling. And that's just a renewal, folks, but, you know, I guess I don't think we had a millage bill that we voted on for garbage recycling in Dearborn. I just thought it was part of the regular budget. There's no tax increases if this is renewed, by the way. So that's what it says. The millage would help fund the city's obligation to the Central Wayne County Sanitation Authority, primarily for trash and compost disposal. Okay. Rejection would result in a shortfall in the sanitation budget, which could jeopardize the continuation of the curbside recycling. Well, that's what's going on over there. Henry Ford Community College here, we just got done about 3 long years of reconstruction and expansion of our parking lots. Our parking lots are in beautiful condition and right in time for the 20,000 students that we got this fall. Every single space seems to be taken up by a car these days at peak times. And we still have one more big project on the block, and that is a new science building. Actually, going to renovate and expand our current science building. It's going to be 20,000 square foot expansion. That's how important science is for every program, now and in the future, even more, folks. So we want to be there. We want to be cutting edge, as we have been in the past, for all the latest technologies, as well as just physical space to accommodate all the new students that need those programs. They have also, from last Sunday, that is the 24th of October, a detailed summary about the debate between John Dingell and Rob Steele. Again, this is for the office, 16th District office. And, we have a note. Jocelyn Benson is stuck in a meeting, so she won't be calling in today. I will fill you in on her for her sake anyway, since I brought up her name and talk about Secretary of State's office. The headlines, first of all, it was held down in Monroe, Michigan. You might say, well, what's Dingell, you know, from this area? We're used to him being in this area, 15th District Congressional District, that is to Washington, D.C. Why did he and Steele have this debate down at Monroe County Community College? Well, first of all, Monroe is part of the district because of the crazy gerrymandering, as they call it. That is where the legislatures, and the last time it was done, it was actually a Republican legislature in Michigan that did it. They wanted to draw the guidelines to have as few Democrats, registered Democrats, as possible so that John Dingell might lose someday. Okay. And so that's what they did. So he's got a little bit of West Dearborn, which is the Republican, more Republican side of Dearborn. He goes to Ann Arbor and you say, well, Ann Arbor is liberal. A lot of students are not registered or they vote back at home. So there's actually not that high a percentage of registered Democrats in Ann Arbor, a so-called liberal bastion of the world. Then pencil-thin lines, 10, 20-mile line, all the way down south to include Monroe. It's a crazy quilt design just intended to give Dingell as few Democrat voters as possible. And that should be outlawed. That should be eliminated. It should be ended. It should be changed. And I know a lot of people are talking about a fairer way to draw the district lines, which have to be redrawn based on population moving around. You know, if you have fewer people, you should have about the same number of people in each district. But politicians, being cagey, selfish people that they are, they are aware that they could draw the lines to include more of their party or fewer of their of the opponent's parties in registered voters if they just go a little further west or south or north. Well, we just got the craziest kind of amalgam of districts because the Republicans were merciless in the Michigan legislature when they redrew the districts the last time around. So hopefully if we can keep Democrats, or if we can, and I'm not recommending that necessarily, but if the Democrats stay in the majority, I think things will get back to sort of a unity, a balance, that certain contiguous areas that are side by side, that'll be the boundaries. You shouldn't have these little lines of people all down Telegraph being in one district as if, you know, telegraphers have a lot in common. Well, they got noise and pollution, and but you know, it just doesn't make sense in a cultural way to have these lines drawn in that fashion. So anyway, Monroe is part of the district, no question about that. Okay, but the odds are they probably never even heard a debate up there. But of course, it's probably Republican territory more than it is Democratic. But it was uneventful, according to Dennis Oblander, or the press and guide who was there. They trade some barbs, use the same bullet points or sound bites, if you will, little short phrases, and the same, you know, Republican line as the Democrats are to blame for everything. And of course, the Democrats say the Republicans are the party of no, and got us into this mess in terms of jobs in the first place, and so on, that we've heard before. So similar themes. John Dingell, of course, years and years in office, and Rob Steele, a cardiologist, heart man, yeah, from Ypsilanti, not Ypsilanti, by the way. But they don't mention that, of course, there's more people on the ballot, such as Amy Smith. And there's also, as long as we came up with this, there's also Matthew Furman of the U.S. Taxpayers Party from Willis, Michigan. I don't know where that is. Carrie Lee Morgan of the Libertarian Party from Wyandotte is also on the ballot. So there's five people on the ballot who are trying to get your attention and to get your vote as 15th District Representative to Congress, that is to Washington, D.C., House of Representatives. But hopefully we'll be able to get a phone communication from Amy Smith, who's supposed to be calling in a few minutes. In fact, in the Press and Guide last Sunday, although they corrected themselves on the Wednesday edition, they say the State House of Representatives, 15th District, only has Suzanne Sereny and George Durrani running for that office. And that's a mistake. And they corrected themselves on Wednesday. But there is Daryl Smith, the U.S. Taxpayers Party candidate, who we interviewed on this show, on the Journal. And all of our previous Journal shows, going back 3 months, we've had candidates from Virge Bonaro and Rick Snyder and George Durrani. Suzanne Sereny was on last week. So you can go to the Journal on the website, whfr.fm, Journal button, click on a date, take your pick, and there's bound to be a politician being interviewed in there somewhere. If you missed out on that, shame on you. Or you don't have the time to review it. But there are other choices than Democrats or Republicans. And I do not believe that our system is going to fall to pieces if you vote for a so-called third-party candidate. Okay, that I had a civics professor in high school that said that, and the whole country will fall apart. Well, Canada doesn't fall apart, and most of the other countries of the world that have three or four parties or five parties don't fall apart. They just do business in slightly different ways, but a two-party system is not in the Constitution. So for all of you Constitution lovers out there, oh, we got to be a strict and follow the Constitution to the letter. Well, there's no such thing as guaranteeing two parties only. That's crazy. It's not in the Constitution. Why? Because it doesn't matter. Okay. But now those two parties, they're like monopoly. Together, it's called oligarchy. When two large corporations, and that's how I see the Democratic Republican Party, this is my opinion only, of course, not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College. Did I mention my name is Jay Koronek? Okay. Yeah, okay. I think many political scientists would say that the two-party system creates a stasis. You might refer to it as gridlock. After they're well-established, they keep other ideas out. Okay, won't let the third parties even get on the ballot in some situations. And they design the laws so the debates only include them, or don't agree to debate any third-party candidate. You just simply say, no, I don't want to be part of a debate that has anyone other than my major challenger. Yeah, yeah, because some good, different ideas might come forth, and they're scared of that, of course. I guess I have to mention that everybody, including the Press and Guide, has come out endorsing Rick Snyder for governor. The Dearborn Times-Herald has not endorsed anyone, which I think is unfortunate. I don't know if they're afraid of being criticized or whatever. I should mention that, of course, people that we've followed here and we've done our homework, folks, Jack Lessenberry of the Metro Times and others are not in favor of Rick Snyder. Many, many endorsements. Okay, a lot of union endorsements, a lot of teacher endorsements, a lot of public endorsements that are going to Virge Bonaro, the Democrat. And so, and I've looked at Snyder's so-called 10-point plan. It's all cute little phrases. I don't see any specifics there. And just in the last second here, because there's also an editorial from the Republican Party treasurer of the state of Michigan, Carl Myers. Guess who he supports for 15th District Rep? Suzanne Sereny. Okay, it's not exactly like he's independent voice here. Suzanne was on last week, and she had a fact that she tossed out that Michigan was the 15th worst, the 50th at the bottom of all states of the U.S. for having a business climate that is terrible. In other words, high taxes and so on. Not true. I said it was 24th. I got the facts in front of me. It's actually this year 17th. 17th best. Hi, it's the WHFR Journal. Jay speaking. Hi, Amy. Yes, I'll put you on the air in about 15 seconds, all right? So thank you for calling. Okay, hang in there. Hello, Amy Smith. Are you on the phone?
Yes.
Very good. We haven't met in person before. You live in Ann Arbor, is that true?
Yes. That's
okay,
right.
And I haven't seen you in the area, but I don't know if you're familiar about with WHFR-FM. We're an independent, non-commercial radio station based at Henry Ford Community College here in Dearborn. And because we're independent, you know, we can interview all kinds of people, all kinds of ideas. And so it's sort of our mission in terms of topics of interest like politics to get the word from people who are not incumbents, first of all, but also people from political parties other than the Democrats and the Republicans. And you are a member of the Green Party of Michigan, correct?
That's right.
Okay. And you are running, as we just got done talking about here, there was a big story in a local paper about the debate that happened a week ago Wednesday between John Dingell and Rob Steele. Now, that's a Democrat and Republican that you're actually running against for this 15th district seat for U.S. Congress. Number one, they didn't invite you, did they?
No.
And did you ask? Did you know about it was going to happen?
No, but okay. This is my third run against Dingell and not Rob Steele, but And in the past two cycles, the main debates excluded, basically the Green Party from, you know, from every race.
Yeah.
So, in fact, one of our candidates, the governor candidate, was assaulted and arrested for trying to attend a debate and suffered some broken ribs and such. But the point is, we tend to be excluded, and if we're not, there's pressure from the incumbent candidate in particular, most likely to not make it a valid debate or to not participate himself. And then,
right. Yeah. Well, they're apparently very afraid of what you might have to say and giving people other ideas and other choices.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that they're very comfortable with the structure where the dominant voice is one that's paid for by corporate money, corporate interests, people associated with those interests, and that is how they've geared the politics that they're delivering, and so it's not in their interest to discuss and debate that in other forums that aren't managed by those same interests and protecting them from the kinds of discussion that would expose that. And mm-hmm. that's exactly why we need stations like yours, and it's so great that they exist, and they need to be supported. And that's why we need alternative parties and people that are building the movement in throughout society, media, politics, education, everything that is challenging the idea that these corporations can control everything for us, that they will do things that are in our interests. And, in some cases they certainly will, but in many cases they don't, and that's where it gets dangerous.
Why don't we have about another 10 or almost 15 minutes to talk to you today, by the way, if that's good for you, right?
Yep.
Okay. So let's start by just giving us your background and how you got involved in politics and why you chose the Green Party.
My educational background is in science and engineering, and I did a PhD in material science working on solar cell technology.
Wow, great.
And I'm very interested in the using technology for actually protecting the planet instead of just exploiting it and seeing what we can do in that arena. But my time spent doing my PhD and learning more about the scientific community and the funding structure and the connection with the political system made me realize that the limitations in issues, for example, as alternative energy are not they're not technical. They're political limitations. There's been so much progress in solar cell design, quality, manufacturing, all kinds of aspects of this technical issue have been explored, and often with very lean budgets have made systematic progress. But the amount of research funding and support for traditional technologies such as drilling bit technologies for fossil fuels exceed this kind of work. And so with that kind of bias at the outset and then other kinds of institutional bias with delivery of electricity and that kind of historical bias, it's a political issue. It's, mm-hmm. it's an issue where we have to decide what kind of society are we going to have. Is it one that serves everyone? Is it one that protects the plant, the resources and the integrity of our environment for the future? Or is it one that just take as much as you can now and make as much cash as you can right now?
I think it's just a commentary. We can't take sides here at WHFR. And you still there?
Hello? Yep.
Okay, just a little feedback here somewhere. I think it's when people are trying to decide who to vote for, and you talk about qualifications, it's not usually mentioned how smart someone is. That is, if they really know, for example, science. And there's so many issues that we have to consider in the political arena about how we're going to handle our energy needs of the future and get jobs back, mm-hmm. manufacturing in the right direction. It would seem extremely helpful in general that we would have people actually elected to office that already know a lot about science and, in fact, would know what is real science or fake science. I mean, so many politicians seem to be, and they're mostly Republicans, I'm sorry to say, but some Democrats even say there's no such thing as climate change. It hasn't happened. We don't have to worry about it. There's no problem. And that's just so not the majority opinion of people who are scientists, who have looked at the research, who have done the research. And so I just think it's a wild and crazy idea that somebody who actually knows science has the degree to prove it. And your background apparently is that you have special knowledge about solar energy, too, and the production of that. Again, not an endorsement. I'm just saying, wow, what a concept to have someone that actually knows something about science directly and can't be led by the, you know, by the nose by some lobbyist group like the coal people or the oil people. Just great concept there. I just want to mention to you that we're talking to Amy Smith, who is candidate for 15th District Representative to Washington, D.C. You know, John Dingell says he has 55 years of experience, and that's true if you like his record. Rob Steele, primarily a cardiologist, he says you should vote for him, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but from that debate, because he has no experience. So now you have been actually involved in politics with the Green Party. You've been a member for how many years?
And yeah, I first learned about the Green Party in 2000 when Ralph Nader was running, and I was just very excited about the idea of a party that was based on values and instead of, I guess, just interests. So that's when I got involved, and I've been very active in my local and state chapters as well as in the national level. I was originally, when I was doing my graduate school work, I was in Cambridge, Massachusetts, so that's where I joined and was active in the local, and then when I moved here, I became active here, and I'm currently co-chair of the, or vice chair of the state party, and a co-chair of my local chapter. The party structure in this country is very weak, and it's actually been weakened over time, perhaps deliberately with the idea of making it more democratic, but it actually went the other way and made it more, made candidates more beholden to outside financial interests than to the will of their own party members. And so, you know, the Green Party is a growing movement. It's something that is getting power and coming into power in various parts of the world. The Green Party candidate was second in the recent elections in Colombia, was third in Brazil, is a deciding factor in the policies that take place in the Australian Parliament right now. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it seems for a lot of people in this country like a pipe dream to say that, you know, these two parties are so powerful, how can we ever do anything to overcome that? We have to do our best within the two-party structure. But what I'm saying is that the inspiration from other parts of the world shows that it is possible. We have unique hurdles in our particular electoral system, but still, when we have the vision, we could work to tackle those as well.
And the Green Party is more than just about the environment, either the current environment or improving the environment. I always forget there's a couple the four pillars.
Yes, we have the concept. Four pillars and the 10 key values, and
we'll just go over the four pillars.
But they kind of capture all ecological wisdom, grassroots democracy, social justice, and peace and nonviolence.
Okay, let's go through those. Don't we have grassroots democracy right now?
Well, with the recent Citizens United Supreme Court decision, we have a democracy that is very beholden to the most powerful, to the most well-financed, and
The people who are the richest are the ones that get the most TV ads,
and
right?
Voice, I mean, and their interests attended to, and on and on and on. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's just one piece
that should change, right?
Not grassroots.
And what
and
else?
Our media structure, it tends to be very centralizing in the way it focuses on issues and topics. And
it sounds crazy here, but I have a call coming in. One of my guests canceled that was going to follow you in 5 minutes, but I'll just. I'm just going to have to let their light flash there. I want you to keep talking about the two other pillars, okay? And then I'll give you a couple minutes to sum up your candidacy, reason to vote. Go ahead.
Okay, social justice. is another, and you know, the idea that people should be treated fairly and you know, basic respect and human dignity for all, regardless of any particular, you know, history or background or identity, is very, very important, and something that is not, we're not there yet in many respects in this society. And of course, a big, huge one, in for, especially for people in Michigan, I would think this hits home very hard, is the way, the war footing that our society has been on in the past decade, really, in, with a vengeance, but longer for sure. So nonviolence, that we, you know, seek to solve problems through nonviolence, certainly through aggressive military conquest, is not the way to solve financial problems. And, you know, people might have been tempted to think it was, you know, even if it was horrible or immoral, that it would solve economic problems in places like Michigan, but we found quite the opposite in the invasion of Iraq and the, you know, and the subsequent occupation and the invasion and occupations of Afghanistan. The massive budgetary outlet, the starving of the economies of the states, like robbing the states and the locals to pay this massive federal outlay, that even if you separate yourself from the moral questions about solving, you know, differences in the international arena through just brute force with massive civilian casualties and devastation to civilian infrastructure. So even putting that to one side, has this benefited Michigan? I don't think so. And if you don't think so, then we need, you need to look hard for some other way to go forward rather than supporting candidates like John Dingell, candidates like in the Republican Party who have been supporting the funding of these wars, supporting them taking place, and then turning around and supporting things like bank bailouts while people are getting thrown out of their houses by these same banks that have, you know, been fraudulently, it appears, you know, claiming to have a right to do that to people when they haven't. So, you know, these are the, like, you know, things that hit home hard in Michigan. And these other issues like climate change or, you know, environmental, like habitat destruction, just this environmental toxicities, issues that are all kinds of things, aging nuclear reactors, you know, what's going to happen with that over time? We just keep relicensing them when we don't really have sound material science to say that they're safe and that they will continue to be structurally sound. So, you know, there's on and on and on, all these issues that are very serious and will hit home at some point, even if right now it looks far away.
And they don't seem to be a top priority for the Dems and the Republicans. I mean,
no,
they
because
have.
They're not working on the change that would address them. So their strategy is to just make you not think about it. Like, don't think about that oil from the BP oil leak. No, it's gone. It vanished. Don't think about it because nature took care of it, they're claiming. Well, no, that is that oil, you know, conservation of matter, right? That oil is somewhere, and it's in the ecosystem, and it's not protected. The ecosystem is not protected from it the way it was before, and that's a real thing. So what to do about it? Not just brush it under the rug. That might buy time. That might allow people to get their seat, you know, retain their seat, but that isn't going to change the track that we're on that is so damaging and non-sustainable and for the future of our society.
Oh, very well put. I want to remind our people, I'll give you just a moment to sum up your candidacy and why they should vote for it. We've been talking with Amy Smith today from the Green Party. Yeah, she's a candidate for that seat to Congress from the Dearborn area, but it's also like Ypsilanti, Ann Arbor, and down into Monroe, a crazy district gerrymandering, which I don't think represents grassroots democracy either. But you could be our rep. You've been in Dearborn before, by the way?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, we're not hard to find right down Michigan Avenue there. Okay.
Right.
So I just wanted to emphasize to our listeners that you are a totally valid choice, along with a U.S. taxpayer and a Libertarian Party candidate, too. And we do really appreciate getting your voice on and hearing your passion. What's the main point that you'd like to make about why people should vote for you for this office?
Well, I think that the system is very broken, and but staying home is not really going to send any kind of a message. So, you know, to some extent, you can send a message by voting for a candidate that is standing on principle and it cannot be bought. I also just really want to give for any people interested in the Tea Party movement who might be listening. You know, the anger behind that movement is very valid. The concerns that many, many of the members have is very valid, but it's very important to look at the way it's being directed and managed by people who are very interested in keeping certain things just the way they are. And so just to be cautious of that, you know, so if you vote for me, I think that would be great to send a signal that, you know, we're looking for something else. But that would be a first step. I hope everyone will take responsibility to do the hard work to look into who's behind these various movements and figure out, you know, what really is in your interest, what really is in the interest of your children and your grandchildren or grandnieces and nephews if you don't happen to have children, you know, so that we can, you know, each of us can be doing what we can to turn this thing around, because the pace of ecological destruction is just not something that can go on forever and not be having serious impacts on all of us.
Last, Amy, how can people find out more about Green Party of Michigan or your candidacy? I have to say, I did try, although it was like 12:30 this morning, going to amysmith.org, and I couldn't get in. Maybe your server was overloaded with people trying to find out about you. But there's the Green Party of Michigan website?
Yes, migreens.
migreens.org.
And then our local, if I can say that, is the HV for Huron Valley. Greens.org.
Oh, okay,
and,
great.
I just point people, there's an interesting article there called Local Centric Article, and that details kind of a vision of how this process could happen. So if you're at all interested, I hope you would look there and maybe you'll join us.
Oh, thank you for all the background information. Got to get all those choices out there or it's democracy is no good. So,
right. Information is the oxygen of democracy.
Yeah.
Without it, it dies.
Very good.
Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for being with us today and good luck in getting the message out yourself.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Sure. Bye-bye. So that was our interview with Amy Smith. We have a... just a reminder, it's pretty clever, well-produced. You better go vote next Tuesday, and we'll be back with more Journal.
Attention, WHFR loyal listeners. Don't forget to vote on Tuesday, November 2nd. Polls are open for all registered voters from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Make your voice heard. Vote on Tuesday, November 2nd.
An event so shocking, so terrifying, they only do it once a year. It's called the Grab Bag. Simply call WHFR on Halloween at 313-845-9676 and say trick or treat. And you'll receive a grab bag full of goodies. Log on to WHFR.fm for more details. And thank you for listening to the station making waves, WHFR 89.3 on your FM dial. Happy Halloween.
That's pretty scary stuff. So if you would like a scary grab bag, which might have, who knows, old used CDs, I don't know, candy, spiders, we're not promising anything other than it might be quite scary. We're giving them out free. It's true. It takes a lot of effort for our staff to throw the stuff and these shipping things and get them out to you. But you need to either call us Sunday, not now, this Sunday, October 31st, sometime during the day, or go to the website. Send us an email, whfr@hfcc.edu on Sunday. And give us your address, name and address, and we'll send a grab bag out to you in a couple days. That's true. This is the new WHFR Journal, Local News Alternative Views. My usual co-host, Dennis and Amy, are at a broadcasting conference today in Lansing. And I trust they're learning all kinds of good things about broadcasting, and we wish them well out there. Jocelyn Benson called in, or at least someone called in for her, said she couldn't make it, although I did get that other call on top of being on the air live here that I couldn't pick up a few moments ago. But the note clearly says she won't be calling in. Okay, So we wish her well, but I did want to at least let you know why I actually included her, okay? And that is because as the Democratic candidate for Secretary of State's office, she wrote the book. She wrote the book about Secretary of State. It's called State Secretaries of State, Election Law, Politics, and Theory. And it just came out in March. It is a big multi-page, what do they call it, tome. It is probably for a law library. She is a full-time law professor at Wayne State University and has been very, very active in issues about elections and election fairness in several organizations that she's been a part of and one that she set up. And in the book, she indicates she has a series of case studies, anecdotes, and interviews with current and recent secretaries of state from all around the U.S., and the basic premise of the book is the primacy, the importance of the Secretary of State's office. I mean, before I did this research, I thought, well, Secretary of State, they used to do those driver's licenses. And then if you think about it for just a second or two, they also oversee all the elections, like the one November 2nd. Who coordinates? Who tabulates the vote? Who keeps it all fair? Who takes care of the machines and deliveries? And at the state level, coordination is at the Secretary of State's office. And we all should realize that democracy and voting is no good if they're not counting your votes. Or if, as John Hockenberry, who is a on National Public Radio show in the mornings in WDET, as he said this morning, he went to vote last year. They didn't have any machines. There weren't any machines delivered. Boy, was he mad. And I don't know how they got to vote. Maybe they got to scribble something down on paper, but he didn't say how that worked out. There's actually four or five different issues that have to do with this. So on votebenson.com, that's where you can go to find out about Jocelyn Benson, who is, again, she wrote the book on it. Now, you might say, well, I just want an average person there. I don't want somebody smart. I don't want somebody who's who knows what they're doing. Well, of course you don't. I mean, who would say that? Who would say that? Don't you want experience and knowledge? And Jocelyn Benson, and I'm not recommending her you vote for her, but who else has written the book? This is the definitive book on Secretary of States across the whole U.S., what has been done, what needs to be done, and what the job should really be all about, what major changes should happen. She knows. She did the book. The book. The most recent book. And is well respected and is endorsed by just about everybody, including the free press and so on. I think, well, the qualifications are one thing. The party affiliation, that means something to other people. And there's other criteria people use to vote for candidates, I know. But I've never seen such stellar recommendations and such intensely specific plans for anyone running for a political office. I know one of her ideas, I heard her on a debate with the Republican challenger on public broadcasting about 2 weeks ago, is that this office shouldn't be political. It should be nonpartisan. And I was going to ask her, does that mean it should be just running as a nonpartisan candidate to get elected or be appointed by the governor or just be the best person in the civil service organization of the state of Michigan? I'm not sure what's worked out in other states. So I had a lot of questions for her, and if she gets in office, I want to get back in touch because she knows a lot, and I think we need to know a lot. The Libertarian candidate here, Scotty Bowman, for Secretary of State, he raised the question about the national ID and the real ID program that Washington, D.C. is trying to push on all the states. Is she in favor of that? She doesn't speak directly to that, so it looks like she's not. It's not a campaign promise of hers. But she's also in favor, and she was going to use Secretary of State's office, fighting fraud and deceptive practices in terms of voting and in the initiative process, too, to get things on the ballot. She's in favor of mandatory audits, reconvening the Executive Committee on Consumer Affairs. So some of those you might have thought that the Attorney General's office in Michigan is the only one doing that. But no, Secretary of State's. And, of course, what about those branch office services? Oh, my gosh. She has five different specific plans from votebenson.com here that I'm looking at to improve the local services. And I'm always afraid to go to the Schaefer office of Secretary of State because I usually have to wait an hour and a half. I usually take a book or two to read while I'm waiting, but that's not service. And a lot of people don't have internet access and can't do the stuff online. They're forced to go through that, and it's not right. But also uniformity and fairness in driver's safety and licensing, the possibility of multi-year license plates, modernize and update driver's education. I'm all for that. That's for sure. And priorities for campaign finance reform. Since she's over election, she's got activist. You don't like those activist judges? Well, hey, even Republican judges are activist. Okay, come on. So that's not the issue. No, she, from her background and her history of studying and researching what works as Secretary of State's offices, she wants increased transparency and disclosure of corporate influence, wants to reform the so-called robocalls, where the computers call you to tell you who to vote for. She wants no foreign money influencing Michigan elections. She wants to eliminate potential for quid pro quo corruption, consistent and nonpartisan enforcement of current campaign finance regulations, and shareholders' bill of rights she wants to get out there. So I just, and I don't know if I'm going to vote for her or not. I'm not saying, I'm just saying, just like with Amy Smith, imagine electing someone who actually is educated and studied in the job that they're going into. And you would expect that with a lawyer. You would expect that with a doctor. But a politician, do we really want someone that knows nothing? Just one of the average guys or gals? And they're out of the water. They're out of their depth. Or they're drowning, to use the metaphor the other way around, because they don't know anything. They have to believe whatever they're told from either a corporate interest or a lobbyist of some sort or another buddy in their party that say, "Well, vote this way or we won't vote for your bill." I think you got to have independent-minded people that have the facts, that have the knowledge already so that they can stand up and do the right thing when needed. It's a difficult call out there, folks. It is. And it's only about 1 minute before Highway 61 and blues music, the best in blues here at WHFR Dearborn. Joanne Korchinska is expected in the studio in just a moment. I heard today about the Constitutional Convention. Constitutional Convention proposal. Jack Lesenberry thinks it should go through. Almost everyone, every candidate except Harley Mickelson, the Green Party candidate for governor, says no. I didn't ask Amy if she's for that or not. The problem with it is not the cost, about $45 million, I guess, to the state of Michigan, because it's a chance to really put significant positive change in place, but there's got to be another election. We have to locally, in our gerrymandered districts, elect somebody, whoever wants to run, and they got a campaign, so it's going to be the biggest name former politicians, I'm afraid, that are going to get elected. And they go to the convention, 150 of them do, and for 2 years they fight over what to change. And then we get to vote it all up or down as a package. So what are the odds we're going to get a great package? I don't know. But I think it's worth a try. That's my opinion. I'm not telling you how to vote, though. Most everybody seems to be against it, which is strange. Well, there's a lot of choices out there. I hope you will keep your head and read and study as much as you can right up until the last minute. That is oh so important. And there is also a proposal on the ballot about keeping felons from running for office or something for 20 years, something like that. And everybody's in favor of that, even though there's actually some freedom and liberty challenges. There might be some legal challenges to that.